Welcome to episode 53 of the Golf Talk Podcast, the post-masters edition. This is Eric Barzeski in Pennsylvania. We got snow again. Screw it. Jack is joining me. I forced him to because he too has snow in New York. And Jeff, we don't care about, but he's with us in Seattle or near Seattle. So
I don't have snow.
Hello to everyone. Screw you, Jeff. Moving right along to our first topic and only topic this week, basically, the Masters. Zach Johnson, winner of exactly one PGA Tour event to this point, wins the Masters. So the first question, of course, is this going to be, a one-time thing, or is this going to launch a career that is respectable?
Well, I looked at Zach's own words. He said that every time that he played in any arena that he kind of rose to the top, you know, we saw that perhaps in his high school days, into college, onto the Hooters Tour nationwide, and now just a couple of years after joining, well, more than a couple, right?
3 years after 2004, I think, was his first win. Yeah.
So 3 years after his rookie year on tour, he's a Masters champion. Wouldn't be a bit surprising to me to see him win one or two more majors. Played really, really, really steady. Kind of caught lightning in a bottle. Did great.
Jack?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be another Larry Mize. I think he's going to have a better career than Larry. Is he another Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, Retief Goosen? Time will tell, but, you know, I kind of don't think so. But I think it's a nice story. He's a nice kid. He did a great job. He shot the best round on Sunday, and he deserved to win.
And the best round being a 69, of course, on Sunday. Not exactly the numbers we're used to seeing on Masters Sunday, and not the numbers we're used to seeing throughout the week, of course. Which was more surprising, that Zach Johnson won, or that the course was both set up and that the weather added to the unusual scoring? We'll call it unusual for now. The boring scoring.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the weather was the major factor. For the first time, all the changes that they've made to Augusta, you know, showed their teeth.
Against Augusta, though, the weather was known to be bad the entire time. It was not great during the practice rounds, and all the pros were saying on Thursday how the conditions had changed dramatically overnight. And then on Sunday, they watered the greens and the scoring came down a little bit. And also the fact that, you know, the pins on Sunday are a little more accessible on a few of the greens. So could they not have watered some of the greens? I mean, balls were bouncing, pitching wedges were bouncing and running over greens like we've never seen before.
Well, the biggest story for me, obviously, was the way that the Masters was playing this year. Far bigger than Zach Johnson's win is the fact that it really was brutal. And I think a lot of us, and we've seen a lot of buzz elsewhere on the internet, that a lot of people said, hey, this is the toughest Masters that's ever been played. So much bigger story there, that they were having a tough time stopping wedges on the hard pan.
Right, except, I mean, it was, like I said, a little bit easier on Sunday. I feel kind of bad for Zach Johnson, honestly, because the course, you know, we saw stories earlier in the week saying the course is winning. And, you know, that's not what you want out of a Masters week. Tom Fazio was standing around, one reporter said, with a gleam in his eye. The Masters should not be about the changes that have been made, or some guy, you know, that's made some changes and done some things and so on. It should not be about Tom Fazio. It should be about whoever's playing, whoever's winning.
Exactly.
And this week it was about the course.
Exactly. You're exactly right, Eric. And I think, you know, you can trick up any golf course in the world to be unplayable. And I really think that the first 3 days of the Masters, they came close to a Shinnecock situation where the course was really, you know, the pros all said, in reverence to Augusta, I would assume, that, you know, it was fair, but boy, it was really right on the edge.
And there were some pros, though, that spoke out, and you don't expect it because of two reasons. One, it's Augusta, and you just don't criticize when you're still a player. Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer came out last year and criticized heavily. Not really players right now. Not really competitive. And two, you don't complain about a course that you're playing because it just puts you in a bad mindset. I always like to play against people, I've said this before, in the rain, because I'd say, hey, I love the rain. And that would be all I'd think about it, because I knew the other guy would be thinking about it a lot more than I would, and that would diminish from his ability to deal with it, and, you know, it gave me an advantage. So pros, as a general rule, don't detract from the course they're playing, even if it's a dog track, because it decreases their chances of playing well. It puts them in a bad mindset. So even still, a lot of pros came out and said not some nice things about the track this week. So, you know, we haven't seen that before.
I want you to think about this, though. I think the long-term benefit for Zach Johnson is that he played and won at, as some have said, the toughest Masters ever played. Secondly, he stayed out in front of the man who's going to be remembered in history as perhaps the greatest golfer who's ever lived. So I think perhaps, you know, for posterity's sake, in years to come, this is really going to play into Zach Johnson's favor, that he was the guy who stuck it out, a horrendous golf course.
It may be. He's not exactly what you'd call built to play the Masters as kind of a shorter hitter. So does this then set him up to be a future U.S. Open-only kind of champion? Or, you know, of course, if the Masters continues to, you know, if Augusta keeps playing this way, then maybe those. But, you know, in my mind, it almost sets him up as a U.S. Open-type winner, or maybe even a PGA-type winner, because they're a little severe. They're not quite as severe as the U.S. Open, but, you know, kind of that American style of golf. And not so much maybe the British Open and the Masters if they get back to what it kind of used to be.
Well, when the fairways soften up the Masters, I don't think we're going to be picking Zach Johnson to repeat any year that we have really soft fairways in particular.
Does this set him up for U.S. Open wins only?
Oh, I think it's a U.S. Open. He's got a shot at the Open. I think when you think about it, he's a really a furic kind of player who hits fairways, hits greens, and putts lights out. And, you know, the fact that he won the Masters going so many under, what was it, 11 under on the par fives?
Right.
And never going for them in two?
Not once.
Yeah, that's a U.S. Open player.
The course, really, it's tough to not talk. I want to talk about Zach, but, I mean, there's not much to say. He got a lead. He hung on to it. He increased it at 16. He gave one back at 17 after looking at the leaderboard, realizing he was up by three at that point. And, you know, not much to say.
Oh, he was steely. He was just steely all the way down the stretch.
He looked calm the entire time.
He did. He looked very calm, relaxed. He was excited about the putts that he made. And obviously he dropped one on 17. That was a mistake, a little hiccup. And then kind of a loose iron shot into 18, but, you know, rectify that situation with an incredible chip. And he played well. He looked like Tiger most of the time looks like.
Well, exactly. And the thing is, when it comes down to it, Sunday at the Masters, over the back nine, Zach Johnson got it done. And what more can you say?
Well, Jack, you can tell us about what you think about Tiger. You can tell us about Tiger Woods.
and
the many others who had a chance, including, you know, I got a list here of the guys that finished. Zach Johnson, of course, won. Rory Sabatini was in it for a while, had the lead alone for a while. Retief Goosen had the lead alone for a while before his putter cooled off. Tiger Woods, of course, had the lead on the second hole for about 5 minutes before dropping that. Stuart Appleby had the lead for a while, started the day with the lead. Didn't play very well. Vijay Singh climbed up into contention for a little while. All of them, of course, except Zach, not winning.
Well, I'm not. Everybody's a Tiger fan. Everybody, including me, can not help but admire the greatest golfer ever lived. And
He had his C game this entire week. Would that be fair to say?
That would be fair to say. But the one thing that really bothered me, I mean,
yes, I know.
You've already heard.
Go ahead.
The one thing that really bothered me was that in his all-too-brief press conference, I mean, he didn't even really give a press conference, but in his remarks to the press, he blamed his bogey finishes on, I think it was Thursday
and Saturday.
On Saturday, on his losing the Masters. That's not what happened. The man had the lead 3 holes into his final round.
For a couple minutes.
And he didn't get it done on Sunday. Just what I said, what Zach Johnson did was get it done. He wouldn't admit on Sunday he couldn't get it done. Now, that may mean that he's, you know, in a little self-denial that, you know, maybe I didn't get it done, but I didn't really lose it today. I lost it those other days. The fact remains, he didn't get it done Sunday. He did not make an Arnold Palmer charge. He did not do the bear tracks of Jack Nicklaus. He didn't get it done.
I'll agree that he didn't play well Sunday. I mean, he tied his best round of the week, shooting even par on both weekend days after coming off a 73 and a 74. I do think he feels, though, that, and I think it's fair of him to say, that had he not made those double bogeys to close his rounds, because that kind of puts you in a weird mindset to start the next rounds following, including the Sunday round, those were stupid mistakes, and those were dumb things that he shouldn't have done. Even if he was playing bad golf, he should find a way to make pars on those holes those days. I think that's what he was saying. And I blow a tire on the first lap of a NASCAR thing and never are able to catch back up really again. It's tough not to blame that first lap. So
well, we saw Tiger Woods up and down all week. I mean, he didn't play. you know, you could look to his first round.
He had a C game.
Well, he was just kind of up and down, and then we see him hitting these loose shots into the woods, and of course, scrambling like no one but Tiger can scramble. And so he obviously kind of kept himself in business by getting up and down when he had to, make, you know, breaking an iron when he has to, and just, you know, doing whatever it took to get pars. We just didn't see we saw the determination in Zach Johnson that we normally see in Tiger Woods, and he just flat out didn't play up to par. And I saw him, that giant slice he tried to hit into, what was that, 15? Probably.
He kind of had to at that point.
Well, he may have had to, but had he made a birdie there, he'd have been one shot closer, and it would have just been one more birdie in three holes, and he'd have had, yeah, so there's a, I think you could make
I think it was say I think it was three have. Back at that point, or at least he was at least two back, because Zach was ahead.
I think
on,
it was two back
16 or so,
but I think
Zach hadn't bogeyed 17 yet, so he was two or three back with two or three holes to go, two of which he had bogeyed twice in the week already. So for him not to go there, he kind of had to, I think, especially coming off an eagle at 13. He just way overcut it. You could see it on the TV as soon as he hit it. I'm like, well, that's right. And obviously it was going to be short too. But
he sure was standing open to that one.
Just a bad shot. He tried to cut it. He overcut it. So it was what it was. But, you know, I mean, Tiger Woods hit the ball in the water four times this week, I think. So what about the other guys here? You know, I don't want to, we're going to move on here to, you know, Rory Sabatini, Retief Goosen, and what was the deal with these guys? They all had the lead at one point, and none of them, Justin Rose had the lead at, you know, various points. You know,
Retief. Well, I think Retief made a huge mistake in laying up on the, you know, on
he teed off with an iron.
And 13, I mean, I realize you've got ice water in your veins, Retief, and he's probably my favorite golfer out there. But come on, boy, you know, you got to go for it. There comes a point where it's do or die. And
The commentator said he remembers hitting a loose shot on that hole. He's a hooker of the ball, so he hit one into the woods, and so they thought perhaps that was in his mental. But hey, you know, take that into account and don't do it now.
four birdies on the front nine. All pars from 9 to 18 with a single bogey thrown in at 12. So started off strong and then just finished steady, which probably would have gotten it done at an actual U.S. Open, but in near U.S. Open conditions, not quite good enough to get it done, I guess. Needed a few birdies. His putter went cold on the back. He had 11 putts through, you know, 9 holes or something, and then two-putted pretty much from there on out.
Exactly, and I think Sabatini is just a loose cannon. I mean, he's capable of the eagle that we saw, and he's capable of
the
whatever.
Five on 14 and the bogey on 16 and the bogey on 9, you know, an up and down round. Birdie, you know, a few pars, birdie, bogey, par, birdie, bogey, par, bogey, par, birdie.
There's a guy that needs some Prozac.
Yeah. And Tiger Woods, we know about a lot of birdies and bogeys mixed in, mostly pars though throughout the day. Stuart Appleby, you know, starts off with a double bogey on the first hole to lose his lead immediately. Birdie 6 with a great shot to a couple feet. Plays par golf from there on out, except at 12, he double bogeyed. Taking away the double bogey at 12, he ties for the lead.
Exactly. You know, what a burden. What a burden, though. I mean, if you were...
He shouldn't have had his hair. I mean, his hair looked like... he looked like Greg Norman. I mean, if you're going to try to tempt fate at the Masters, don't dress like Greg Norman. Wear a purple and black shirt and look like Larry Mize, if anything. I mean...
That's it.
My redhead just kept guffawing every time he showed up on the TV with that hair.
That's why I called him Shaggy in the live vlogs.
Yeah, really. And I can't believe Bridgestone is very happy that all that hair was covering the logo on his visor.
Or that Augusta was very happy that he looked so unkempt. I didn't get a chance to look at Charlie Hoffman this week, but I'm pretty sure that he might have cut his hair.
Yeah. I would hope so.
I don't know. We'll be back with some final discussion on the 2007 Masters, so stay tuned.
7 years ago in Las Vegas, Nevada, the Titleist Pro V1 made its professional debut.
I won with it the first time I put it in play.
It was an instant phenomenon. Number one on every worldwide professional tour. Number one with PGA professionals, with collegiate players, top amateurs, men, women, and juniors.
Seems like everybody plays a Pro V1.
The Pro V1 became the uncontested standard of performance. And best-selling ball and golf shops everywhere.
It's my number one seller, by far.
Nothing else comes close.
Now there's an all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
I won the first time I put it in play.
Pro V1X does what I want it to do.
The Pro V1X gives me better distance control.
I love the new alignment line.
It gives me more confidence.
The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Better than ever.
And welcome back. This first article here in our very quick beating balls segment this week is still, of course, about the Masters. I wrote an article I'll link to, of course, called something along the cheers have left Augusta. And this one's called Bring Back the Roars to Augusta. We've talked about it a little bit before, but really not a great setup. It was a very, would you agree, this was the most boring Masters you've ever seen.
Well, what I don't like seeing at a Masters is the absolute nerves you see on their faces on the greens. I mean, you know, the fairways are one thing, but boy, when they hit into those greens, they were U.S. Open light greens. Everybody knows how tough those greens are at Augusta, and these guys are flat out freaked out. Until Sunday, you started to see a little more confidence in people's stroke,
a little less
confusion there. But man, it was tough to watch for 3 days.
And Jack?
Well, when the pros start talking about worrying about where the ball is going to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, that's out of control in my estimation. I think that, you know, all the changes.
We spent 4 days watching the ball slowly roll away from the hole, basically.
Yeah, or roll off the green. I mean, guys were chipping and seeing it roll off the green further away than when they started. Luke Donald, when it comes back to him twice.
Well, we've seen that at every Masters, though. That's just dumb.
get
it past the flag.
Mostly more. Though we see that at the U.S. Open,
we see it at Pinehurst, type courses, not so much at whatever. And this course and the way it was set up, we have four different unique majors. You know, the British Open is its own because it's British golf. It's bump and run. It's windy. It's very few trees. It's fescue. It's pot bunkers. That's the British Open. The U.S. Open is a brutal grind of survival and par. You know, that's the U.S. Open. The PGA, I think, is actually kind of one of the fairest tests of golf. It's kind of a blend of the U.S. Open and a little bit easier scoring, not quite as dull and whatever. So that's that. The Masters has always been about excitement and reward and people pulling off great shots and making eagles and doing all kinds of things. And we didn't have that this year. We had very little risk reward this year, and that's, to me, what defines the Masters. I don't care if the winning score is 50 under par. Everybody's playing the same course. By that extension, you could say, I don't care if it's even par. But you do, because there's a difference between everyone making birdies and everyone making pars.
Well, one of the things that makes the Masters unique is that it's the same venue every year. And
right.
I, who have been watching it for 20, 30 years, you know the course by heart. I was lucky enough to be there once. I know the holes. I know what they're doing. But with these changes, it's a different golf course. And I think that takes part of the charm away from the Masters when they make it so different that all those years of watching don't mean anything.
We have a stat here on how the back nine played in the third and fourth round. And you can see that it did get a little bit easier. But every one of these holes played over par. The easier day, the fourth round, 10 played at 4.26. 11 played at 4.39, 12 played at 3.4, 13 played just under par at 4.6, so a little bit of a break there. 14 played at even par, but that had that hole location that, you know, the balls could funnel right to. 15 was barely under par. In the third round, it was over par at 5.3. 16 was over par at 3.2. 17 was over par at 4.2. 18 was over par at almost 4.3, so not what you expect from a Masters.
It's definitely not what we're used to saying, and we're used to saying, well, I am anyway. Arnie charged through the back nine, you know, shoot at 30, like Nicklaus did in 86, like Mickelson did, and that just wasn't going to happen this year. And I, you know, I don't know, Jeff, how you felt about it, but the first 3 days I watched it, it was like a funeral. You didn't hear the roars. There were no cheers.
No, you got golf claps for saving par.
It was painful. In fact, I was sitting there watching it with my wife Thursday, Friday afternoon, I forget which, and you're just thinking, oh, this just hurts. Just watching the looks on their faces, it really wasn't, as you said, the Masters. I thought the first thing I thought of was, you'd never seen a back nine like Nicklaus put up in 86. Couldn't have happened.
I read a few things, too, that made the point that the Masters is the one tournament a year that non-golfers or people that are mildly interested in golf will watch because it's exciting, because people are cheering. You know, they get that. You don't have to.
Right.
You can watch whatever sport, and if people get excited when something happens, you understand excitement. You know, excitement is a universal kind of thing. And this year, people are like, you know, what's so exciting about the golf? This is your big tournament. This is it. And, you know, this is boring. People are hitting it and looking grumpy and...
On the verge of tears. What fun is that? This is supposed to be the kickoff to the golf season. I don't need to see tortured souls, you know?
No, well, unfortunately, now we have to endure two U.S. Opens this year.
And I highly doubt 20 under is going to win at Oakmont, so...
Probably not.
We'll move on to Tiger's check swing when he stopped the swing. Is that, I mean, honestly, is that one of the most impressive things you've seen? Paul Casey said it was. He stopped the swing not from the top, but, I mean, he was, you know, the club head was 2 feet from the ball when he decided,
it's
you know.
Extremely athletic. I mean, more athletic than you will see on the PGA Tour. I mean, that's what I thought. I was just raw athleticism out of him.
Jack, do you think he hurt anything?
It was physically impossible. I mean, I'm really surprised he didn't hurt himself so bad he couldn't keep
playing. Do you think he might have hurt himself? He denied that he did.
I definitely think he did. And I definitely think it impacted his play the rest of that round. Now, whether he recovered from it for the next rounds, you know, I don't know. But
he was shaking his wrist several times throughout the rest of that round, at least.
You can't do that. I mean... The physics are just such that I don't know a human body that can withstand that.
He said he felt like he broke his back, his wrists, his neck, and his legs, and he doesn't know how the club didn't snap.
The best ever.
Yeah. Speaking of snapping clubs, one of the other most impressive things you saw this week when he snapped the club against a tree when the ball was sitting next to it, and then made par. Just to get the hands out of the way, I mean, he followed through, immediately tried to slow down the club as much as possible, let go as soon as it hit the tree, and, you know, basically the club snapped in half, and he made par and suffered no ill regard from that.
Well, again, an incredibly athletic move, but I'll tell you what, when I saw that, I worried for the gallery. It was obvious he was going to break the club. He knew he was going to break the club, and what I worried about, being an old man and being cautious. Is the club head and the shaft flying around, flying into the patrons, let's call them, and hurting somebody.
Yeah, I think the physics are that the shaft would either go left, like around the tree, or forward in the direction it was going. It'd probably be very odd for it to rebound off the tree. So the thought occurred to me while I was watching it, but I was thinking that the shaft would either go forward, you know, after snapping, or kind of wrap around and go left, depending on when it broke. It'd be very hard for it to kick off to the right, which is where the gallery was. But you're certainly right. It's could have ended badly. I don't know what the odds of it were.
Well, I think they were long odds. And I think the fact that he had planned to let go of the club, which he would have to do to avoid hurting himself, you know, it deadened the snap and... So it just fell to the ground.
Obviously, none of us would risk that shot. But then again, we pay for our equipment. So,
yeah, too much too.
Now, finally, here, just one quick question on Tiger Woods. I was contemplating writing an article about how something just seems off lately with Tiger Woods. Of course, this is on the heels of him winning, you know, 9 tournaments practically in a row at the end of last year, including both majors at the end of the year. But you know, the missed putt, which Jeff and I call a choke. At the match play, just being off here, the 43 at Bay Hill, just stuff that's uncharacteristic of Tiger Woods, putting troubles that we haven't really seen before. Is something off this year?
I think the one thing I would point to is that this is a 30-year-old Tiger, not a 20-year-old Tiger. He's had all this experience. He's already, I mean, think of the amount of events this guy's racked up already. 12 majors. I mean, he has accomplished so much. I mean, could it be that the stress of the last 10 years, forget the last 10 years, I mean, all those amateur years, do you think that's kind of piled up on him and he's now kind of feeling the weight of all that?
I'm asking you, is something off this year?
Well, I think that what he might be dealing with is a little burnout, even something like what Annika we talked about is dealing with.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the pending birth of his first child has him distracted, quite frankly. I think he's got a lot going on right now, and it's all good, but it's not all about golf.
And he's heading up the AT&T National. He's without his dad for the first year, really. I mean, his dad was still alive at the Masters last year.
The man has got a lot going on, and he's in a time of his life in the early 30s where you go through some changes, and he's gone through big changes with his coming child, and I think he's adjusting to that, and I think his attention, he would never admit it, but I think his attention is on other things other than golf. Okay. More so than in the past, anyway.
All right. Well, I will point out that Tiger Woods could still technically surpass Jack Nicklaus's record by the end of next year.
That's entirely possible.
It's possible. If anyone could do it, he would, but it's long odds on that. Perhaps Tiger should wait till he's about 50, because we got our last article here is on the, it's called Pondering the Greybeard's Success. It talks about the success of, in making the cut, basically, not of actually contending, of Fuzzy Zeller, Sandy Lyle, Craig Sadler, and Ben Crenshaw, when people like Ernie Els, Sergio Garcia, Chad Campbell, Robert Allenby, Steve Stricker missed the cut. There's something to be said for experience, I guess.
Oh, the author got it right on. You know, it's old age and treachery that got those guys around the course, especially how long it was playing. And I think that the fact that the fairways are running really fast probably gave them an advantage, too.
Jack, well, my question for you is...
Okay.
My question for you is, were you surprised by Tom Watson? You know, he had to get up over and down. He had two putts to make from a bunker on 18 to make the cut at plus 8. Three putted or something. You know, he missed like a two-footer that he just kind of got up and whacked at.
Well, he broke...
So what's up with that? I mean...
He broke my heart. I mean, and he did it because he can't putt anymore. I mean, if he could...
He just walked up and hit it. He didn't even like line it up or anything.
He can't putt anymore. It's nerves.
Well,
it's too bad. But I'll tell you what, that those four guys made the cut is in direct relation to the way the course was set up and the way that Tim Clark led the tournament, the way that Zach Johnson won it, you know, that it was running so hard and so fast in those first couple days, the old guys had a chance because they were getting another 20, 30 yards out of it.
And it's interesting they made the cut with 60 players because of the 10-shot rule. Zach Johnson nearly holed out to go to minus 5 at one point, 3-putted to go fall back from minus 3 to minus 2, letting all the plus 8s in. The field would have been much smaller. It would have been 44 in ties.
Well, exactly.
Under another rule, had he just birdied or parred that hole.
Exactly.
Retief Goosen came from barely making the cut on the number to being in contention on Sunday. So, interesting. Well, you know, Zach could have made it a lot easier on himself if he had made a putt earlier
well,
in the week.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a great justification for the 10-shot rule. Retief
Indeed.
Was there at
and
the
it,
end.
It let some of the older guys in, so that was good to see. Last question for you, Jack. And Jeff, you can answer this too as well. Will Sergio Garcia ever win a major?
Whoa.
let me clarify. Will Sergio Garcia ever win a men's major on the PGA Tour? No Champions Tour and no sex changes.
I'm going to say no. I think
you're looking for me to answer now?
Yeah, answer.
If you backed me into a corner, I'd have to say no unless he turns his putting around. No way.
And I think, again, that's purely mental with him. But he's screwed up in the head. So I'm going to say no as well.
Well, he's got to grow up and he's got to learn to putt.
Unless everybody dies on the PGA Tour, I don't see it. That'll do it for episode 53, the Masters edition of the Golf Talk podcast. Hopefully it was a little more enjoyable than the funeral procession that was the Masters this year. Again, no disregard. Zach Johnson played extremely well on Sunday. So all the talk about the course is a separate discussion. Zach earned his win. I think all three of us can agree on that.
Absolutely.
And all the congratulations in the world to him. And my wish for him at this point is that he doesn't change nor let, you know, this win bring him down for the next 2 or 3 years, you know, until he learns how to deal with fame or...
Tries to play to this level all the time.
Right. Just keep on your course and play well. That's what I can wish for him. But again, that does it for episode 53. Check out our show notes online at thesandtrap.com. Join our forum at thesandtrap.com/forum. And other than that, enjoy Verizon Heritage this week and 2 more months until a major. We'll be back next week with the next episode. Take care.
Bye-bye, all.
All right. Hey, we'll see you. Yeah.